If I went to see a provider, I know to ask for more because of my background. But if someone else that wasn't in my space was going in, and if their provider was only offering them the CF23 mutation panel when they were pregnant, they might not know to ask for more. And they might not know that their test has a lower detection rate because they're trusting their provider to be offering them what's appropriate and what's right.
Welcome to GenotypeCast, a new podcast from Gray Genetics. Genetics isn't always black and white. News stories related to genetics often raise more questions than they answer. On GenotypeCast, we bring you insight from genetic counselors. I'm your host, Eleanor Griffith, a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service.
I agree that it might not be for everyone. What I advocate for is everyone should be offered the option of it and offered it in a way that's unbiased, with the pros and cons, and allowed to make that decision on whether or not it's something that they want to do for themselves.
Aishwarya Arjunanan is a certified genetic counselor. She graduated from the University of Pittsburgh in 2013 with a Master of Science in Genetic Counseling, as well as a Master of Public Health in Human Genetics and a Certificate in Global Health. She currently works at Myriad Women's Health, formerly Counsyl, as a clinical product specialist for carrier screening. Prior to joining Counsyl, Aishwarya ran a carrier screening program for the Sarnoff Center for Jewish Genetics. Of relevance to today's episode, Aishwarya is of South Asian ancestry. So Aishwarya, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Glad to speak with you today.
So the reason I reached out to you, so we're both on Twitter, and I don't know you outside of Twitter, but you tweeted something that now has gotten a lot of attention, and it's currently your pinned tweet. So your tweet was, "I always use myself as an example. Why should I get a test with a 55% detection rate for CF23, which is cystic fibrosis, the 23 common mutations, while someone who is Ashkenazi Jewish has a 97% detection rate? We're both paying our insurance premiums and deductibles. Why do I get a lower quality screen based on my ethnicity slash race?" I'm impressed that you could fit all of that in one tweet. So for people who don't know the CF23 and the significance of being Ashkenazi Jewish, can you talk just a little bit about why the detection rate is different for different people and why you yourself would be a good example?
Sure. It took a few times to make sure that it fit within the character limit. But honestly, it just comes from what we know. Historically, all of the data in healthcare, for the most part, is very Eurocentric. And we can definitely go into other conversations about why that may be and trust within the healthcare system within different races on whether or not people want to participate in healthcare. But the Ashkenazi Jewish community and the general Caucasian community is where we have most of our data and where most of our guidelines are based on. And cystic fibrosis was the first condition that was recommended for pan-ethnic screening. And when it was recommended, costs were high. So costs of sequencing, and it wasn't feasible to maybe do full sequencing of the entire CFTR gene. And we didn't have all of the information that we have now about what the various changes or mutations meant for people and whether or not they were truly disease-causing, if it caused severe classical CF or maybe some sort of variant or atypical cystic fibrosis. We didn't really have all of that data when pan-ethnic CF was first recommended. But over the years, our information and the knowledge that we have, not only about CFTR, but basically our entire genome has changed and evolved. But guidelines haven't really changed. ACMG actually just updated their variant standard for, or their technical standard for CFTR screening, and said that full sequencing of CFTR is appropriate to be considering. But that's still just a technical standard, not a true guidelines update. And most historical guidelines say that when you're doing carrier screening for cystic fibrosis, you really should be doing the CF23 and that full sequencing isn't appropriate. But the CF23 mutation panel really only includes mutations that are common. And what's common is what's known, which is what's known for the Ashkenazi Jewish and Caucasian population. So it's just kind of this trickle down effect that has trickled into guidelines and how we provide care. And why I made this tweet was just in the larger discussion of the conversation that's happening right now about systemic racism and trying to address a point within how we practice care as genetics providers, that we actually have better tools and better technology that's available now, yet our guidelines are still antiquated. And unfortunately, patient access and coverage is dictated by those guidelines. And payers may not approve or willing to cover more comprehensive screening because of those guidelines, and that guidelines dictate this is enough or this is what you should be doing. And I really just wanted to start that conversation. Like, what are things that we can control and that we could possibly influence when it comes to the way that we provide care, and what can we advocate for to make sure that we are providing comprehensive care? And that's kind of where this tweet came from and why I talked about it, because it's something that I ask about myself. And I talk about in the sense that if I went to see a provider, I know to ask for more because of my background. But if someone else that wasn't in my space was going in, and if their provider was only offering them the CF23 mutation panel when they were pregnant, they don't know, they might not know to ask for more. And they might not know that their test is a lower quality test or has a lower detection rate, because they're trusting their provider to be offering them what's appropriate and what's right. And
I was going to say they shouldn't have to know to ask for more. You would think that, you know, they should be able to expect that they'll get the best medical care possible.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of information out there. And I know that people want to make sure that when we're providing information or we're talking about new advancements in technology, that we have all of the information, that we can trust the information that we're providing and the services that we're offering. But in some ways, we've seen genetic testing explode with direct-to-consumer testing. Patients are interested in this information. And I'm an advocate of doing more than cystic fibrosis and doing expanded carrier screening. But I agree that it might not be for everyone. What I advocate for is everyone should be offered the option of it and offered it in a way that's unbiased with the pros and cons, and allowed to make that decision on whether or not it's something that they want to do for themselves. I definitely don't think everyone needs to be forced into doing carrier screening or expanded carrier screening, but I do think it's something that should be discussed with every patient and discussed in a way that's not biased, because I've heard from other GCs that they've heard from patients where it's offered as something like, well, it's something that we recommend. CF screening is recommended by guidelines, but you don't have a family history, so you probably don't need it. And it probably is going to be expensive. So do you want this screening? And I don't know who would say yes to that when a provider is saying that to you. If a provider is telling me, well, you don't have a family history, so you don't need it, and it's probably going to be expensive. And if they're offering that option, I'm probably going to be like, yeah, no, you're saying that I probably don't need to worry about it. So why would I pay extra money for this when that's not the way that we should be offering that testing? And also the misconception that just because you don't have a family history doesn't mean you're at risk. I think a lot of people think like that, where just because they don't know it or they don't know that there's a family history of it means that they don't need to be concerned about it or that they're at risk. My thing is more just that knowledge is power. People should be given that knowledge and be able to make whatever decision they feel is comfortable and right for them. But that information needs to be given to them. You don't know what you don't know. And if your provider isn't giving that to you, that's who you're trusting to be kind of mining the sources and giving you the information so you can make that decision. I don't think it's helpful for us to make that decision on behalf of the patient before we even ask.
Right. And just to clarify, you've heard like providers will say they're not sure the patient needs like cystic fibrosis carrier screening at all, or they're not sure that they need like expanded carrier screening, which would include like a more comprehensive analysis of the CFTR gene.
Well, I've heard both. So In my previous role, I used to speak with providers within the Midwest region about carrier screening. Some providers weren't doing it at all. Some people were hesitant to move to more expanded screening, which it's completely understandable. It can be overwhelming. There's a lot of genes. But a lot of providers I would hear, oh, well, my patients aren't going to do anything with that information, or my patients don't want that information. And I would always have to probe a little bit and ask, like, what do you mean do? What do you mean they don't need? Because I feel like with genetic testing, a lot of people think that genetic testing equates having to make a decision like, having a diagnostic procedure or maybe having termination at the end. And it's really kind of level setting with people that people don't need to do as they think anything with this information, but having the information and being able to maybe research a particular condition or talk to a specialist if their baby might be affected, or figure out a care plan and kind of just prepare and do whatever they think is comfortable for themselves as action, but also not doing anything with the information is also action. It's an action that the patient is consciously deciding to take. So to your question, I've heard both. Patients don't need this information when it comes to just even cystic fibrosis, and they're not sure about making that switch from CF to expanded screening, which again, I completely get it's hard to make changes and it's hard to switch up with new technology and to keep up with everything that's changing. But expanded carrier screening has been around for a decade now. And we know that patients use this information to guide their family planning. And we know we can do it in a way that's easy and translatable and a way for patients to understand it. So it's just trying to figure out like what other barriers other than coverage, which is its whole other issue, but like what other barriers are preventing providers from offering this testing?
Right. And I mean, a funny thing in genetics is like, so let's say like someone wants broader coverage and more accurate tests for cystic fibrosis. The most cost-effective way for them to get that would probably be through expanded carrier screening, even if maybe they didn't want the information related to all the other genes, right?
Yeah, 100%. I really think the cost of doing expanded carrier screening is very similar to just the cost of what just screening for cystic fibrosis used to be.
It's pretty sad. The family history comment you've heard, I guess I'm a little bit surprised that an OB would think that no family history of an autosomal recessive condition would matter that much, just because like usually we wouldn't expect to see family history with an autosomal recessive condition. I wouldn't expect all lay people to remember that from like sophomore biology in high school, but I would expect an OB to know it, or at least not to advise patients against testing because of lack of a family history.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's something that I've heard more than once. And I always want to assume positive intent, right? Like for us, we focus just narrowly on genetics. So we're keeping up with as much as we can about genetics, and other healthcare providers are focusing on so many other things. So it could be that it was an offhand comment and not meant, but I do think a lot of people tend to forget like, oh, I'm not seeing these patients with rare disease, so they don't need to be screened. When we looked at kind of the testing that we offer, and we actually published on this, we saw that about 1 in 300 pregnancies to be affected with one of the conditions that we screen for in our expanded carrier screening panel, which is higher than what we think about the incidence of Down syndrome, which is something that we screen for routinely in all pregnancies. But a baby affected with Down syndrome is something that a provider sees at delivery, and it's something that they actually do know and have and I don't want to say treated, but they're aware of it and they see these pregnancies that are affected. But most patients with rare diseases aren't diagnosed until they are toddlers or even older, depending on what the rare disease is. I believe Global Genes has a stat that it's about 4.5 to 5 years for a patient with rare disease to get diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And so most of the people seeing the kids affected with rare diseases are actually the pediatricians and not the OBs. So I think not having that in the forefront, people just think rare is rare, but it's actually more common than we think it is. And most of these rare diseases aren't something that you can see outwardly. It's not like you're going to walk by someone on the street and be like, that person has this disease and that person has this disease, where some other conditions that people generally associate with genetic conditions might be more noticeable. So I think it's all about what people know and people can associate with that then also kind of dictates how they practice care.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. For someone listening who's kind of like, what, now wants to find out more about expanded carrier screening or preconceptual carrier testing and look into something that their physician may not have offered to them, like what resources would you suggest for them that we can link to in the show notes?
Yeah, so there, I think there are a few, all of the carrier screening labs, of course, will have material for you. But if we're thinking about things that might not be branded as much, I know there are resources from the, is it the Genetic Support Foundation? I believe they have resources. There's actually an expanded carrier screening coalition. So it's a group of organizations, labs that offer a carrier screening that have come together to advocate for access and medical coverage and guidelines coverage. And they have some information about carrier screening as well. You can always find a genetic counselor at NSGC and find a prenatal genetic counselor in your area to talk to and learn more about carrier screening. There's organizations such as the Sarnoff Center for Jewish Genetics and J-Screen that also have a ton of information about carrier screening on their websites. So there's a lot of good resources, and all your providers do know about carrier screening. So I think it's always worth having that conversation with your provider as well, because who knows, you might end up educating them and maybe changing their practice and helping expand access for more patients that go to your clinic or your provider.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, and so last thing, because I knew we were talking about this right before we started recording, what has been the reaction to this tweet? That, you know, you put something on Twitter, and sometimes it's a little unexpected what ends up happening with it.
Yeah, so I think for the most part, I think people agree. I mean, I'm assuming that hearts mean that they agree with that statement. So I'm going to take the 80 something people that have liked that particular tweet to say that they actually agree with it. But I do think this just kind of expands that we need to be having these discussions within our community as well to see what systems are in place that we may have perpetuated this kind of divide. Like, are there places where we're providing care based on ethnicity where we might not need to, because technology has evolved and changed and we need to be thinking beyond what we can do. I think even for being in a field of genetics, which changes so much, a lot of folks within our community and even ourselves at times are resistant to change. And I find that fascinating. And I'm not saying that I'm not resistant to change either. I think change is hard for everyone. But I think it's fascinating that we are such a community, like we're in a profession where genetics changes all the time and we're always learning something new. But it's really hard for us to kind of like adapt as stuff evolves. We are not the people that are like the early adopters. And there are definitely cases where it might not be right for us to be the early adopters, but like where's that balance where we can find, like provide comprehensive care and be cognizant of all the things that are changing and make sure that changes are being implemented quickly, but in a responsible manner. Because it's been 10 years since expanded carrier screening came out, and there still really isn't any sort of guidelines from our professional society. And even the first guidelines that came out from ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, was in 2017. So it's how do we react to this more in real time so that patients and maybe non-genetics providers also know what they need to be doing and who to reach out for and how to incorporate this sort of testing within their daily practice, because they're looking to us as the experts to guide them. And if we're not guiding them in any way, what are we doing?
If you are a certified genetic counselor and would like to come on GenotypeCast to talk about an issue related to genetics in the news, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendations.